Marissa Brostoff, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM and streaming live at WBAI.org. This spring, the first volume of a 14-volume set of the collected works of writer and revolutionary Rosa Luxemburg was released by Verso. It's a collection of Luxemburg's letters, and she was what one of the editors of the collection called a prolific, even fanatical letter writer who fused the personal and the political in her correspondence, just as she did in her life. We're thrilled to have with us two guests who have written powerfully about Luxemburg. Paul LeBlanc is a professor of history at La Roche College in Pittsburgh. He has edited two books on Rosa Luxemburg and is on the editorial board overseeing the publication of the complete works of Rosa Luxemburg that Verso is putting out. And last but not least, we're thrilled that Vivian Gornick is here with us in the studio today. Gornick, whose work many of you probably know and who you should read right away if you haven't yet, is a critic, essayist, and memoirist whose work includes The Romance of American Communism and Fierce Attachments. And she reviewed the letters of Rosa Luxemburg for The Nation. So I'm going to start with a question for both of you, but that I'm hoping you can answer in slightly different ways. So starting with Paul, can you tell us about who Rosa was and why she was important to, in a sort of biographical and historical context?
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Great. Well, Rosa Luxemburg was born 140 years ago, and she's had an impact on many people throughout the world. Many people emphasize her love of nature and her humanism, her vibrant personality, and the kind of socialism that she was for. And for her, socialism meant democracy, rule by the people over the political and economic life of society. For many people, her socialism is, you know, especially important because of those qualities that I mentioned. But in addition to having those qualities, she was a brilliant person. She was an economist. She was a very capable historian and political scientist. And she wrote a number of important works that have impacted on political thinking and on social science, that gave a sense of how socialism might be possible and also why it was necessary. She was very passionate, very uncompromising, so that for many people down through the years, she's represented a certain kind of socialism that has been very compelling, especially given the crises of the world that have existed from her time down to ours.
Great. Thank you. And Vivian, can you tell us about Rosa's life through the context of her writing, of some of these letters? That there's a number of them that you excerpted and wrote about in this Nation review that you wrote. And could you take us on a tour of those?
One of the great elements that make up Rosa Luxemburg's importance and influence is the fact that she's one of the very rare socialists, communists, who actually took in her own experience. She, all her theorizing, which was, as Paul says, significant. She wrote many, many, many books, and she theorized a great deal on economic life as a socialist would. But the important thing about her is that almost all her theorizing begins from her own experience. So to begin with, she's 23 years old when she leaves Poland, Switzerland, where she was studying, for Germany. She comes to Berlin to become a part of the German Socialist Party of the time. She's 23 years old. It's 1898. And she gets up. She's sent to Silesia to speak to a bunch of Polish-speaking workers. She gets up there, and she's dynamic. She discovers that she's eloquent, that she can really speak. She can speak passionately. And in the end, the men all glowed and adored her. So she comes away from this experience with the realization that words and the composition of words and the writing of words is extremely important. And she writes to Leo Yogesh's, her problematic lover of many years, that she sees that she wants to write. She wants to write to and for the people. And she says to him, "I want my writing to affect people like a clap of thunder, to inflame their minds, not by speechifying, but with the breath of my vision, the strength of my conviction, and the power of my expression." From there to a sophisticated critique of party writing was one easy step. To her comrades back in Poland putting out the Workers' Cause, a paper she helped start and whose jargon she began to despise very quickly, she advises, "I believe that people need to live in the subject matter fully and really experience it every time, every day, with every article they write, and then words will be found that are fresh, that come from the heart and go to the heart." So she had this enormous intuitive understanding of what life in and out of the party should be, that it should never lose contact with the actuality of emotional experience.
Great. Going back to Paul for a moment, the letters, as I mentioned, are the first of 14 volumes that are coming out, and my understanding is that the rest of the volumes are much headier, more theoretical stuff. Can you tell us about what those other works look like and why they're still important?
Oh, sure. Well, the next two volumes will be her economic works. And one of her greatest economic works was called The Accumulation of Capital, in which she was talking about the development of the global economy. Essentially, she's talking about globalization imperialism. Not only a very critical mind, at certain points she is criticizing Marx and saying, well, he missed this or he missed that, we have to understand things more deeply. But also there's like an anthropological sensibility there, so that she's dealing with what's the impact of this so-called capitalist modernization and exploitation on different cultures, on different peoples all around the world. So in any event, there's the economic writings that will be the next two volumes. Then there'll be probably three volumes of political writings in which, among other things, she argues that the workers' movement has to be vibrantly democratic, that it should not be compromising with capitalism in the way that many of the leaders of that movement were starting to compromise, calling for opposition to militarism and war. Talking about mass struggles, mass strikes that erupted at various times in 1905 and afterwards in Europe. So various political writings that deal with these kinds of questions. Also the Russian Revolution of 1917, which she supported, but also was critical of. She saw undemocratic developments that started to take place very early there, and she spoke out against them. So three volumes of political writings that should be magnificent following the economic writings. And then there'll be stuff on art and culture and so forth that is also very, very fine. And actually there'll be additional volumes of correspondence. The volume that's just come out from Verso has about two-thirds of it has not been published in English before. But there are many, many, many more letters that we'll be bringing out as part of the 14-volume series.
Okay. And
let me add something right here about the writing of The Accumulation of Capital, which is a good example of the relationship between what she was thinking and how she was thinking and how the dynamic between thinking and writing developed in her. And a year and a half before she died, she recalls that the writing of The Accumulation of Capital is one of life's great experiences. And she writes, "The time when I was writing The Accumulation of Capital belongs to the happiest of my life. Really, I was living as though in euphoria, on a high. Saw and heard nothing else, day or night. but this one question, which unfolded before me so beautifully, and I don't know what to say about which gave me the greater pleasure, the process of thinking when I was turning a complicated problem over in my mind, or the process of giving shape and literary form to my thought with pen in hand. And this is what she means when she speaks of the writer reaching deep into oneself when you're writing about class struggle, to pull up the miracle of good writing that flourishes when clear thinking and expressive language feed on each other.
Paul, I want to go back to you for a question about her later letters. It seems like almost the second half of this collection is from time that she spent in prison. She spent several years in a few different prisons and was only out for a few months before she was assassinated in 1919. Can you tell us about that time and who were her most important correspondents when she was in there?
Well, that she went to prison because she was uncompromising, as so often the case in her life, uncompromising in regards to World War One, which she saw, and as many historians observe today, was a war basically for imperialist goals, a war of horrendous, horrific imperialist slaughter. And she opposed it. She saw it coming. She opposed it as it was coming, and she didn't stop opposing it when it came, and she was imprisoned. And in the letters, it's interesting, some of her most important correspondents are, certain young men who were facing the war, Kostya Zetkin, who was the son of her friend, Klara Zetkin, who was another revolutionary leader in the socialist movement, and Hans Dieffenbach, who was killed at the front, and she was very close to him, so that was devastating for her. As well as a number of women friends, particularly Louise Kautsky, who was the wife of Karl Kautsky, who had been close to Luxembourg, and then they had a falling out politically, but she remained close to Louise. And also Sonia Liebknecht, who was the wife of Karl Liebknecht, who was also imprisoned for opposing the war. Especially with Sonia, who was a younger woman, she reached out, tried to bolster her spirits, wrote in a very optimistic tone, and at the same time, with some of the correspondence, you can tell that being in prison and also the horrific nature of the war that was continuing took its toll on her. So there's a poignancy in some of the letters as well.
Next, I want to ask you, Vivian. Can you tell us about her relationship with Leo Yogeshev? This is, as you said, it was a problematic relationship and one that was very important and also troubling to her over the years, and he was a person that she wrote many, many letters to. Can you tell us about that?
Leo Yogeshev was a student revolutionary in Switzerland, where Rosa was sent when she was 18 or 19. She went to Switzerland, to Zurich, to get a degree. Mostly it was to get her out of Warsaw, where she was already on the police blotter. So she goes to Switzerland, and she meets Leo, who's a few years older than her. And Leo is like a Bakunin-like revolutionary, a revolutionary who tells himself nothing, absolutely nothing is of any importance except the revolution. And she falls passionately in love with this. She's young and she's fantasy ridden, and he, in his turn, speaks with all this bluster, but in fact is very vulnerable and also needs a connection. These two make a connection which lasts for the rest of their lives, and it is it's a misalliance of a vital order. Leo is just absolutely incapable of emotional expressiveness, and Rosa longs for that more than anything in the whole world, and she goes on longing for it, and Leo goes on being very, very narrow in his take on life, And what's good about this, which caused a huge amount of pain on all sides, actually, but what was good about it was that she spent the next 25 years trying to convince Leo that the important thing about socialism was that one was going to make a socialist out of oneself from the inside out. And the most important thing about being a revolutionary was to never lose track of or lose connection with one's own actual emotional humanity. That is her great gift, her great insight, and I believe the source of her importance. So because of Leo, she digs deeper and deeper and deeper into all her feelings and her thoughts about why it was important, why it's important for them, they themselves, to connect emotionally, and what that will mean for the world that they hope to bring into existence. It doesn't work. It never works. It's 25 years of this, but it was good for her in this way, and essentially that's what Leo Yogesh's means in the life of Rosa Luxemburg.
So this understanding that as you say in your review of the personal being political, that she comes to through this relationship, did she generalize that into a, did she think of herself as a feminist? Did she have a sense of herself as a woman specifically in this movement?
No, never. Like all communists, except Clara Zetkin in her case. Clara Zetkin was a feminist. No, Rosa completely discounted being a woman, as she discounted being Jewish. These two categories of identity were like the ghetto, the intellectual ghetto for her, as it has been for almost every great communist. Everyone involved with class struggle has always believed that these are all subsets of identity. And that comes the revolution, all of those discriminations for women, for Jews, for everything will evaporate. So, no, she was definitely not a feminist. She understood that she felt strongly because she was a woman, but she did not give that any particular political credence or meaning, not at all.
Let me add a thought here, and of course, these are issues that are complex, and people discuss and debate about them just in our own lives, and also trying to understand exactly what happened with certain individuals in history is also, there's controversy around it. My own take is a little different, and it depends on how you define the terms. If you believe feminist means basically in favor of equal rights for women, she obviously was a feminist, of course. There was one of her best friends was Clara Zetkin, and I think she and Zetkin basically agreed on the politics of socialism and of women's rights and so on. At the same time, people who were the male leadership of the Social Democratic Party in Germany really would have loved to have marginalized her, or made her somebody who was focusing on women's issues. And she fought against this ferociously and bent over backwards in order to prevent it. She was insisting on writing about economics, about the class struggle, the trade unions, and so forth. So there's a complexity in the way that she was negotiating issues of women's rights, feminism, their relationship with the labor movement and the socialist movement.
Well, we really disagree on this one. I'm afraid that's not feminism for me. Clara Zetkin was a feminist. She concentrated on women's rights. She understood that being a woman was a very separate and special category of being. I don't think Rosa ever saw that. She on the contrary, she argued with Clara constantly. She taunted her about it. And yes, of course, she fought against being marginalized. But she fought against it in that old way, that women who thought of themselves as the brilliant exception entered wholly into a man's world. And, you know, she identified with the aggressor, as we say, and which was, you know, fine. That's who she was. She did the work that she was fitted for, but it wouldn't have done women any good at all, in my humble view.
Let me just add one thought, and that is that our listeners and others should also delve into this, and they'll have more of an opportunity to as we're making more of Rosa Luxemburg's writings available. I think this is a valuable and fruitful kind of discussion for all of us to be having.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And I just want to, we only have time for one more pretty quick question. Vivian, your book from, I think, 1977, Romance of American Communism, talks about the idea that for American Party members, the party was their great romance. That was how they thought of it in those terms. And I'm wondering if Rosa Luxemburg was a kind of romantic figure, at least in the American communist imagination or the American Jewish communist imagination.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, she is a romantic figure. And as I said at the beginning of my own piece in The Nation, when I was a child, growing up in a fellow traveling communist household, her name was from my mother, a reverential name. My mother adored, without being an acknowledged feminist, she adored every woman in left-wing politics who had accomplished something vivid and important. She adored Rosa Luxemburg. But Rosa Luxemburg was a problematic figure precisely because she was such a passionate critic of Lenin and the Russian Revolution. But absolutely, definitely, she was, for many women who were not self-identified feminists, the idea of a woman doing what she did was intensely romantic.
Great. Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Vivian. That was Vivian Gornick and Paul LeBlanc on the legacy of Rosa Luxemburg. I'm Marissa Brostoff, and you're listening to Beyond the Pale on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live at WBAI.org. Just wanted to thank Sean for engineering for us today. And stay tuned for Shelton Walden on Next with Walden's Pond.